You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
Welcome to Psyched by MG. This is Mary Grace Randazzo-Ratliff, or MG for short. I've been a psychotherapist in private practice for 32 years now. Guess what, everyone? We all have issues. So it's time to lighten up and move forward. Let's stop letting our crap control us and take control of our crap.
Hello, good evening, everybody.
What's happening, people?
Well, I think we got everybody on. We got, of course, David Wright, who's with us every week, co-host, Matthew Fox.
Hi.
Our producer, Jamie Flanagan, who you can't see right now, our producer.
Probably
and it. Matthew is going to be joining us in a minute. He's trying to get through the link.
Perfect.
And then we, of course, have the special guest tonight, Dr. Barbara Heller Bursting, osteopath with like 20 years of experience, I believe. Correct?
About
that. And so we're going to get to Barbara in just a minute. Oh, good. We do have Matthew on. Hi, Matthew.
What's going on, Matthew?
Matthew Burita. So we got the three therapists here. Mm-hmm. Matthew introduced Barbara. But before we start with Barbara, let's just check in. I was talking to Jamie before we went on, talking about like there's just battle fatigue at this point. Like clients are so burnt out, stressed out, getting tired. Parents are fatigued beyond fatigue. I mean, I did two emergency sessions just on Tuesday. But yeah, my people are really, really having a rough week.
Well, I think the big problem is it's going to go on for a while because I mean it's been done and now we're going to have summer vacation. So again,
parents I know.
Children for almost 6 months straight, which if you're not used to that, I mean it sounds right that you're with your kids all the time, but if you're not, you're playing parent, you're playing teacher, you're playing caretaker, you're trying to do your own work,
everything,
it's just a lot.
It's, yeah, I mean, poor parents, especially of the young ones, like that they have to just be on, you know, the whole time and who are dealing with teething issues and potty training issues and the toddlers going everywhere. And, you know, I keep trying to just help them to get creative and to build supports in. And I had one mom this week who, gosh, my heart just broke for her because the fatigue was just off the charts. And she was worrying about this fall, like, oh my gosh, if they don't go back to school, what am I going to do? And I said, you plan now, like you get on the babysitting sites and get those people to your house. Even if it's three times a week, they do outside activities for an hour and a half to wear them out. Just prepare now. For the fall, if you don't use it, no biggie. But if you need it, you have it set up now and you won't be so overcome if it does hit or when it does hit. But there's been a lot.
And that's a good point. I mean, you just prepare now. And if you don't need it, nothing is lost. That peace of mind that, okay, if they don't go back, I have something in place.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Exactly. I mean, it's hard to see, you know, just the stress levels, especially of parents. I mean, we talked to moms last week, and we did men. Oh, Barbara, just to update you, we did a segment with moms and their stress last week and how to help them. And then the week before, we talked about men and had Jed Diamond on. He's an author of, you know, Male Menopause and like 17 books that are just amazing books. And so, you know, this is a great lead-in. You know, we've got Barbara here, and she also practices integrative medicine. Barbara, can you explain what that is first? What is integrative medicine?
Integrative medicine is more of looking for the reason as to what's causing the problem.
Yeah.
How I explain it, people frequently will have a friend or family member with irritable bowel syndrome. Normal medicine is, oh, watch what you eat, and here's a prescription for cramping. What we do in integrative or functional medicine is figure out the reason why are you having these symptoms. Is it a food intolerance? Is it parasites? Is it whatever type of imbalance? You get to the core problem, then you don't have that manifestation of symptoms because the reason for it has been taken care of.
Yes.
It's interesting you bring up IBS, Barbara. And can I ask, I mean, it seems to me, and I could be wrong, it seems to me that's like a new terminology that's just been coined in the last 20 years just to cover bowel issues. Is it accurate?
Yeah, it's a catch-all.
Catch-all. That's kind of what I felt, because I know I've suffered from symptoms of that. And again, the doctor always says, here's some Bentyl, take that when you have your symptoms and, you know, watch what's happening.
You need to figure out the reason why.
Right.
And that's why we're so happy to have you here, because the three of us are seeing the intense emotional stress that people are going through, especially with all the transitions they've gone through, the isolation. And we really want to explore the effects on the body, especially the immune system. And so what are some of the immune system disorders? What are they?
Immune system disorders, you can have autoimmune disorders, something like Hashimoto's thyroiditis. Psoriasis is an autoimmune disorder.
I did not know that.
Your body's attacking your joints. Rheumatoid arthritis, all of those are autoimmune disorders. And then when it's related to stress, when you're under high stress, that depresses immune function. So that sets you up to get sick a whole lot easier. And then when people are under a lot of stress, they do a lot of comfort food. And comfort food is frequently candy and chocolate and high carbs. Which does two things. One is it feeds the bugs. They like sugar, viruses and bacteria. So if you're feeding them, you're setting yourself up for something. And then the sugar also depresses immune function. So you're feeding a not nice alien and depressing your ability to fight the alien. So the alien has a 1-2 punch.
And Barbara, I made biscotti, which is biscotti. I made like 7 or 8 loaves when we first went into quarantine, which was the worst thing. Between the sugar and the carbs, it was the worst thing. I was feeding my family.
I was going to say, are you still making those, Mary Grace?
I did make a loaf. Like, I stopped for several weeks.
We talked about that weeks ago.
And I know. And I made 2 more. But now that I know that, because I did not know that. I did not know what sugar did to the immune system. I didn't think like that.
Right.
So especially if you have a virus that you're feeding it.
Right.
So that's good to know. I won't be doing that this fall. I will try not to do that.
You do it occasionally, but not on a daily basis.
Yeah. This was daily, Barbara.
You don't want to do. I just have my dark chocolate.
So arthritis, which David, your wife has
psoriatic arthritis,
and she struggles with that. And
Dr. Barbara, if you could explain, because again, with an immune disorder, a lot of people take biologics, and what that is, it's medications that, if you could explain that a little bit, so that people can understand.
What a biologic is it tells your immune system not to be on the attack. Because what's happening is your immune system is attacking your own body. So that's what the biologics, the different injections that are available will do. What we do is figure out, why is your immune system attacking? Is it a chronic virus? Is it a parasite? Is it a combination of multiple things?
Yeah,
I had one patient with rheumatoid arthritis, and it was from celiac disease. And she didn't know. So we took away the gluten, and her rheumatologist was really surprised because she started doing better.
Wow.
You have to heal the structures that have gotten sick from all the damage, but, and that takes time. If somebody's had rheumatoid arthritis for 20 years, you're not going to be better in a week of stopping gluten if gluten is the causative factor.
Right, right.
It takes time, but it can happen.
Wow. Well, I was thinking about, you know, when you're under stress, you have all of those. And if you're somebody who doesn't cope well, if you swallow your stress, if you don't process, if you don't connect with others, if you don't talk it out, and you just bear down and keep putting it in, into the body, into the stomach. I talk about, you know, those acids get secreted into the stomach, travel into the intestine, what it does to the muscles, how hard the heart has to work to be able to get oxygen, especially for my anxiety disorders. And so when I think about that, you know, I say, you know, there are stress disorders. And I'm wondering, well, first of all, can we identify certain disorders that are really fed by stress?
Well, part of it can be related. I don't know if you're familiar with the phrase fight or flight.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. Okay.
So some people are constantly in the fight or flight mode, which is fed by what's called the sympathetic nervous system, which increases your heart rate, increases your blood pressure, keeps your muscles tight. So you can run away from a saber-toothed tiger. And it decreases the blood flow to the digestive tract because you need the blood going to the muscles. And they're chronically in this state of tension because you're about to run away from a tiger.
Yeah, yeah.
So what you have to get a person to do is to be the other end of it in a more relaxed state. So the parasympathetic nervous system is working, which decreases the heart rate, decreases the blood pressure, increases the blood flow to the digestive tract, calms down the heart. And you want the balance between the two type of systems, excuse me, because if they're in fight or flight, they're always here. And they've got to be balanced or even more in what's called vagal tone. Mm-hmm. From the vagus nerve for the parasympathetic nervous system.
Yeah. And when they're in that fight or flight, they're not breathing well. I constantly have to say to them, please take a deep breath. Be aware of this physical body. You're barely breathing as you even talk about what your stress is. So then what is the impact, I guess, on the lungs, the respiratory system? When you're really not getting the oxygen.
You're not getting the oxygen. And you're just bringing oxygen like in the top part. And you're not doing the full diaphragmatic breathing that will get oxygen throughout the lungs. Because in order to do the full diaphragmatic breathing, that's using the vagus nerve and the vagal tone, the more relaxed end of the nervous system, the involuntary.
Yeah.
Because you usually don't think about breathing. It just happens most of the time.
Right, right. So what did you call it?
Using your diaphragm.
Oh, okay. Diaphragm. So it's that deep, when you're extending the stomach, that deep breath all the way down from the stomach and up versus just the chest.
Correct. You get the real deep breath by doing the diaphragmatic breathing.
Yeah.
And when I try to ask patients to do it, they'd have difficulty. So I'd ask them to blow up a balloon.
Oh.
You have to take a real deep breath and it forces you to do diaphragmatic breathing. Try it.
Oh.
When you blow up a balloon.
Yep.
That is a great idea. So that's not first tip of the day. Blow up balloons. Hey. Moms who are stressed out could practice their breathing and blow up balloons for the kids.
Right.
Great idea.
Because you have to take a real deep breath to do it.
Right.
I don't think you can do it with just shallow breathing.
Yeah.
Well, it'd take a long time if you did.
There you go.
You pass out, I think.
Yeah, that's true, because you'd be shallow breathing as you blow into it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And our people have, you know, again, I'm going to switch over real quick to the anxiety disorders. you know, physiologically what they go through, especially if panic sets in. You know, you talk about such shallow breathing, heart rate is, you know, increased. Some of them, it gets so bad, it's tingling in the extremities, parched mouth. Right. And they, I do know, is it cortisol that gets overly released when somebody is struggling with anxiety?
Again, when they're struggling with anxiety, they're probably in the chronic fight or flight mode.
Yep.
The adrenals make cortisol, and you need that. You need that to function.
Mm-hmm.
It's an essential hormone. But if you're in the chronic fight or flight, you're pushing the manufacture of it all the time.
Yeah.
And you only have so much. You know, you start running out of substrate. And then that person who's highly anxious frequently will crash and just be exhausted because they've not totally depleted, but they've really run down their cortisol stores because they're going at 100 miles an hour constantly. And frequently people like that also don't sleep well because that same tiger is chasing them through the night, so they can't have a relaxed, restorative sleep. And that also contributes to the anxiety because they're not sleeping and they're not able to reboot.
Yeah. It's exactly what happens. I mean, Dave, Matthew, we see this all the time.
Thing too, because I talk to my patients a lot and even myself. And I think one thing about right now with the pandemic is actually practicing what I also preach and everything we're talking about so that I can actually be the patient as well. So that when I am talking to, you know, the people we're serving, it's like explaining to them that our bodies, you know, kind of historically and just, you know, biologically, psychologically, all the kind of interplay between all that, we aren't made to be, as you mentioned, in that chronic fight or flight. So that, you know, kind of warning them, and as we've talked before, kind of forecasting, right? So it's like, this is what your body, this is what might happen if you stay at this heightened arousal for 8 weeks or 12 weeks, right? And when people say, like, I just feel like I'm burning out, and then kind of explaining to them what that burnout looks like so that they can recall that to avoid that in the future, I think.
Exactly.
Yes. What is lupus?
Lupus is another type of autoimmune disorder. Mm. And it takes a long time to diagnose because you have to have something like 7 or 8 different symptoms that they put in the grouping of things that cause lupus. It can be a headache, it can be muscle ache, joint pain, but for all of these things to develop takes years.
Oh.
So somebody can be having pain and go to their doc, my shoulder's hurting and my knee hurts. Oh, here, take some Advil or aspirin. And then another year, I'm having these muscle aches or I'm having headaches. Now there's some blood work that's more specific for lupus. 20 years ago, you had to wait for the constellation of symptoms and you had to have 8 of these 13 criteria for it to be a solid diagnosis. Now you can diagnose it sooner if you have a high index of suspicion.
Ah.
But again, you find the reason why.
Yeah. So what causes lupus then? Is it the extreme stress? Is it
sometimes it can be the presence of certain bacteria that they were exposed to that their body didn't totally clear. Oh. Sometimes the just genetic predilection. Mm-hmm. So it's a combination of different factors that all comes together as the perfect storm. Mm-hmm. So if part of it might be a food sensitivity, they might need to avoid or minimize mm-hmm. these 3 or 5 or 10 foods and yeah. then do other things to support their immune system and to see what are their factors.
Mm-hmm. So there's lupus, but then we hear of chronic fatigue syndrome.
Right.
And that's
chronic fatigue syndrome is not autoimmune.
Oh, that isn't autoimmune.
No, that's not your immune system attacking you. That's just being totally exhausted for whatever the reason might be. Oh. It could be chronic Epstein-Barr.
Now, what is that?
Epstein-Barr is the virus that causes mono.
Oh.
And some people will heal from mono, and some people will just have the chronic fatigue from it. Frequently, it can be because their body had been under such stress from this tiger chasing them all the time, so their immune system's down, so they can't clear the virus, and they're going into this cascade.
Yeah.
And then it depletes the cortisol levels, so they have no energy.
Gotcha.
And then the depleted cortisol levels and the other problems with the immune system impact the digestive tract, so they're not able to take in any nutrients to help keep their body strong.
Ooh, so it's a hamster wheel in a way.
Oh, yeah. It keeps on going from one system to another. And I don't know if you're familiar with the term leaky gut.
Mm-hmm. No, I don't. Can you explain leaky gut?
Okay. You know, the digestive tract is a tube. I talk with my hands.
Yeah.
You're good.
Okay. And it should be what's called semi-permeable, that some nutrients can go through that the body needs to absorb and other things that are bigger can't. If you have chronic inflammation, those tight junctions aren't as tight and they're open, and certain problematic things or even food antigens can pass through and cause a reaction in the body. And that can be a factor contributing to autoimmune, because that leads to your body attacking itself. But with leaky gut, you don't end up absorbing the nutrients because the GI tract is inflamed.
Oh, boy.
And then that can cause other factors that develop.
Can I ask a question? Would it be okay if I ask a quick question?
Yeah, go ahead. Yes, absolutely.
Gastroparesis, is that like a form of leaky gut almost, or a derivative of? Help me understand gastroparesis.
Gastroparesis, the stomach normally will contract at a certain rate in order to pump food out.
Okay.
Okay. Paresis is a weakness, so it's not able to contract in the way that it normally should.
Gotcha. So it's like usually pushing food through the digestive tract itself.
Gastroparesis is just of the stomach.
Okay.
Oh.
Interesting.
Okay. And that can happen with like it's usually a type of neuropathy.
Meaning?
It would involve the nervous system, a problem within the nervous system where the nerves for the stomach and the contraction of the stomach isn't working as well as it should.
Okay. Thank you, doctor. Appreciate that.
So it really, when we look at lupus and chronic fatigue and the other autoimmune disorders, getting on a hamster wheel sounds like a problem that can happen for any of these, you know, where like, I didn't know you shouldn't eat sugar when there's a virus. I mean, if you start getting on a really bad wheel and you start making decisions and you're having symptoms, and the stress then exacerbates the symptoms, which then, like you said earlier, Barbara, that then you want to eat the carbs and you want to eat the sugar, you really get on a vicious cycle.
Yep. Yep.
So, you know, we did in the last several podcasts, we really like people who are listening to understand that, so that that awareness can help them to get off of that hamster wheel.
It's a lot of work to make these changes, because it's not just for a week or 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And usually, like, somebody can't be forced to say, you have to start doing this now. It's like, when you're ready, I'll be happy to start working with you.
Right.
Because I know that it's an absolute ton of work. I don't ask them to do easy things. It's totally changing their diet, their activities, their outlook on life. It's it's huge.
The whole system.
So, Dr. Harper, Is it fair to so based on the information you're giving us and learning about this, is it fair to say that food is one of the major contributors to a lot of these immune disorders?
Food can be a significant contributor.
Okay.
The main one, not necessarily so.
Okay.
I think it's interesting too what you're saying, Dr. Bernstein, is that, and I see this a lot, and especially right now, and we've been talking about the pandemic, we've been talking about the, you know, the kind of consequences and outcome of, you know, everything that's been happening. And our reaction as, you know, practitioners and, you know, kind of helpers and, you know, as we're helping the clients, and that really resonates with me when you're saying, you know, I'm not asking you, like my patients, to do easy things. And that's something that I think I sometimes even myself, you know, reminding myself and to make sure that I'm cognizant of that, you know, and I just said to one of my patients recently, it was like, you know, I'm not sure if this is the, you know, the most appropriate time to say this, but I'm wondering if you're even ready to change right now. And it was interesting. I wasn't sure, obviously, of what the, you know, kind of reaction was going to be, but from that, it actually filled the rest of the entire session. It just happened to be at the beginning of the session. And, you know, it was interesting. A lot of anxiety came out of it. And, you know, a lot of, you know, oh my gosh, you're right. I don't, you know, I know what I oftentimes, I, you know, the reaction was oftentimes I know what I should do. But like you're saying, doctor, is that, you know, being prepared to make these changes is a really tough decision. And I think just from a therapist's perspective too, remembering that it's a tough decision to make these changes.
It's hard. I will tell people that I had health issues myself, and it took 14 years to find somebody who understood what was going on. So I had to make the dietary changes, the lifestyle changes. And they said, could you stick with it? I said, I did for a while. And I'm human. I go off of it. And then I pay for it. And then I have to go back on it. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. And, you know, Matthew, you're making me think of, you know, a common phrase, you know, for some people, it's when you're sick and tired of being sick and tired.
Mm-hmm.
When you get to that point where you're like, you know, we say to clients, are you sick and tired of being sick and tired?
Mm-hmm.
Are you ready and understand that this is a lifestyle change?
Mm-hmm.
You really have to integrate several things so that you will feel better. And you have to do it long enough so that you can see the outcome of the changes, because they don't happen overnight. You have to stick with it.
Well, and it's interesting you say that too, because recently, even today, I had like a collaborative effort with one of the providers, and, you know, the discussion about the medications and the kind of, you know, kind of the psychogenic and biogenic predispositions. And I thought, I just got inspired, as one does. And so I started talking about just the psychological history and looking at, you know, really what are these kind of dynamic risk factors, as we would call in our, you know, field of psychiatry. And it was interesting. I was able to kind of follow her train of thought and then connect some of the things that I was looking at. And really, both of us came to that realization that, you know, as many people maybe, you know, looking at, oh, well, that's easy. You know, I've been working on this for so many years. But like you said, all of us have had, you know, we're after 10 years or 15 years, we finally get to that point where we meet somebody or someone comes into our life, you know, whether it's professional or personal, right? A special person that really helps us kind of give us that extra energy to push us into our healing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just want to throw something out too, because I have a feeling a number of your patients are probably on meds to increase serotonin.
Mm-hmm.
And serotonin is primarily manufactured in the GI tract.
Mm.
So if you have leaky gut and you're not absorbing the nutrients, then you can't manufacture the serotonin. And if you're under a lot of stress and you have high cortisol, then that decreases the serotonin. So you've got these multiple factors going on. So if you're on a med that slows the breakdown of serotonin, it'll work. But if there's no longer serotonin being made in the body, those meds won't work anymore because it doesn't cause you to make more serotonin. It just slows the breakdown. Mm-hmm. So if there's a lot of things happening in between stress and the GI tract, neurotransmitters are screwed up.
Wow. Boy, that's a really important point. And I, you know, I'm more old school, Barbara, with medication. You know, when I was trained back in the early 80s, it, you know, you used all five axes. You know, you're checking on what is the person's environment like? Have they had a recent, you know, trauma, death, loss? Have they been moving? What is the family history? You know, not only biologically anybody who has a mental illness, but also what patterns of coping have, you know, come forward intergenerationally for people. You really looked at the whole big picture before you looked at medication. Medication was really an aid to help them through that change process. And I think our field has made such a huge shift where people are getting medication so fast and they're not being educated on the effects of this medication on the rest of the body, the side effects, the risks. And so I'm very slow. We used to take months of, you know, evaluating and getting to know somebody before we said, you know what, a medication is needed, or you know what, a medication isn't needed. And the one great thing about integrative health, looking at what is the source, I think it marries really well with the older school, the older approach in working with somebody to really get to know them. What are the family dynamics? What is the relationship like? But also on that axis is, what are they eating? How much caffeine are they drinking? I mean, I remember working with a wonderful physician friend of mine. And he was telling me about these teenagers. And I said, do you know how many espresso shots they're doing? Do you know if they're drinking Jolt at the time or Red Bull? You've got to do whole different assessments before you think that they have an anxiety disorder and can't sit still. And sure enough, he's like, oh my gosh, between the high energy drinks and the sugar intake, these kids are buzzing off the walls. And so it's our field kind of has to go back to some really good practices that looks at the whole body again. And why is this symptom being produced? What is, and then what's feeding it?
Mm-hmm. And I sum this up for clients. Almost every client I see that how do I put this? You know, some clients are medication seekers because
yes,
they're either used to it or they've always taken it or they want it.
They want a quick fix.
Medication is not a solution. It is simply a tool. And we have to figure out if this tool is right for you.
Yes.
So and you're right, the whole mindset has to change because,
yes,
unfortunately, over the years, people have gotten used to just calling to their doctor and having their script filled and going and picking it up.
Yeah. Well, we saw this transition, and I know you've seen it too, in the field where suddenly I had clients coming in saying my OBG gave me a psychotropic drug, my general practitioner. It was like being diagnosed from these fields that back when I, you know, was learning and practicing and in the beginning of my career, you know, they consulted with the psychiatrist. They were, you know, and then if they had a therapist, there were these consults that were happening. And now it's changed so much that I have to constantly educate them and say to a client, you know, we can go slow. We have time and we need to really get to know so that if you do need a medication, you can embrace it in a way that I think will help to make that more effective for you. So, and you know, food, especially with kids, these Jolt drinks and these espresso shots, how many kids go to Starbucks all the time? I mean, caffeine now is you know, off the charts for young people.
Well, and we also mentioned before sugar. Sugar is, I'm sure it's supported somewhere by somebody, but sugar is the worst thing you can probably eat as a kid growing up and as a teenager and even as adults. I don't know. I don't want to overreact and say it's a poison, but it's just, there's nothing redeeming about that.
There is nothing redeeming about it.
No.
It also feeds cancer cells.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Wow.
So,
yeah,
it's bad, and there's sugar in tons of high fructose corn syrup.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's contributed to a lot of health issues.
Yeah. Yeah, it really does. Now, just to switch a little bit, because I was thinking about those people out there who have MS. How is MS classified?
MS is an autoimmune disorder.
Oh, it is an autoimmune disorder?
It is. Your body's attacking itself. And this one doc who ended up with MS is an amazing researcher and figured out that it was yeast, candida.
Oh, wow.
And she treated herself, and she's back to mountain climbing now. Before, she was bedridden.
Mm.
Seriously.
Wow.
And I have a number of patients with MS that I work with, and sure enough, we find the yeast, and we're treating the yeast, working on correcting the gut. And this one current patient also has huge adrenal issues, so we've got to start supporting that system. And I figure in another 6 months to a year, should be in much better shape.
Wow.
But yeah, it was totally changing the diet because it was not the healthiest of diets before.
Yeah. I have a good friend that I had a phone conversation with, and she's a physician as well. She's an osteopath.
Hey.
Yeah, she is too. And she was diagnosed with MS and got to the point she was in a wheelchair. And she was training an intern and who was out of Yale or Stanford, very, very bright young woman. And she was specializing in autoimmune and had told my good friend, Karen DeJoe, she said, I'm going to get you on a keto diet. And she goes, we've got to get rid of sugar and you're going to get out of that wheelchair. And she's just like what you said with this other person. She bikes. She does these fundraisers, these biking fundraisers now. She's physically fit. What this young woman. And Karen said when she first told her she was going to do this with her, she thought, well, geez, I got to do it because I got to support my intern. You know, she's working so hard and I'm her pet project. How sweet of her to do that. So she said, I just went into it to just kind of accommodate this girl and possibly prove her wrong. And next thing you know, Karen said I was out of the wheelchair and I was physically active again. And I thought, wow, that is impressive.
It's fascinating how it works. One of my most challenging patients is somebody with Parkinson's.
Wow.
So,
how is that autoimmune too?
It's autoimmune. Your body's attacking your nervous system.
Boy.
So, Dr. Barbara, what do you feel, or what's your opinion or advice as far as a vegetarian diet compared to a meat eating diet?
It needs to be balanced. Having some people will say anywhere from 4 to 7 servings of vegetables a day. You need to have a lot of vegetables.
Yeah.
I'm not totally against meat, but I think that should be a minimum. And if you do have meat, then it needs to be raised healthy, not this antibiotic and growth hormone injected and free-range non-injected eggs and wild-caught fish, not the farm-raised.
Yes.
Whatever you can do to have healthy food these days, but you need to balance it. And the thing is, each person has different needs as to what works for them.
Mm-hmm.
I have a much higher need for protein than other family members of mine. Yeah. So I'm not a big advocate of do this diet, because you have, and the thing is, as your health changes, the type of nutrients that you need will also change, because if you've had a large deficit of something for a while, you're going to crave that. And once it's in better balance, you won't need as much of that particular nutrient.
Matt Fox.
Yes, ma'am.
Your wife has what immune disorder?
Well, you touched on this a little bit earlier about the body needing to create cortisol, right?
Mm-hmm.
To continue. My wife is has adrenal insufficiency. So she has to take steroids morning, noon, and night.
Right.
To keep her cortisol levels up. If they go too low, she goes into a crisis. So a lot of this is regulated via diet. But you know what? We have good days and we have bad days. So, you know, just, yeah, she's actually listening in the other room right now.
Hi, honey.
So, no, so that's, and thank you for asking, Mary Grace, but you know, this is something that she's been struggling with because she has adrenal insufficiency, and this is something that's just really, we're trying to figure out. You know, we're also
now, does that affect the liver if it's not balanced well?
Well, the liver is a detox organ, mm-hmm. to detoxify. So if the liver is not working, but with adrenal insufficiency, it could be that possibly she was born that the adrenal glands don't work as well as they should.
Or
like one of the things that I deal with is either overactive adrenals and cortisol or too less. I call it hypocortisol. Mm-hmm. Some people will call it adrenal fatigue. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what's going on with your wife,
right?
Except that her adrenal system isn't working as well as it should.
And her adrenal glands shriveled. She was on high dose steroids for a long period of time.
Okay.
She had H1N1 back in, 2009? She had H1N1. So the last time there was a pandemic that it didn't get this much media. So, she's bad. What's that?
She actually did get H1N1?
Yep, she certainly did.
Okay, so her adrenals shriveled up. So she's on a stable dose, and that's probably where she'll need to be.
Yep. So we boost when we have to boost, and
mm-hmm.
you know, we just have to keep an eye on everything at the same time. So is there anything special that we can do diet wise? You know, you guys are talking about diet and cutting out sugar and keto, and we've thought about keto.
Fresh fruit and vegetables.
And if we're diabetic, because we have to regulate her sugars as well. So more veggies than fruit then?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And dried fruit is like pure sugar.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be more fresh fruit.
All right. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Gosh, well,
I wish your wife good luck.
Yes. We wish her all the best and support her. Absolutely.
Thank you.
And so Parkinson's is also autoimmune. Boy, I really do not know my autoimmune disorders. Dang.
It encompasses a lot of things.
Wow.
For a long time, they didn't think of Parkinson's as autoimmune, but now they're realizing a person's body is attacking itself and leading to damage in the nervous system. Patient that I'm working with, we started healing the gut and was doing better. And then sick this winter and was down south and realized that they had mold in their place down there. So he was doing better, but then he was exposed to mold on a chronic basis, which was making him sick all over again. So now, thankfully, starting to do better.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's also environmental toxins that can cause problems. So you have to look at that too.
And these are the people that are such high risk with this virus and any virus, that we want to get as caring people. We want to protect. We want to make sure we do our part as responsible citizens to keep them safe. You know, I've been facing my practice, you know, when do we open? And I have this rule, we can't wear masks. I will not wear a mask when I'm sitting there trying to teach people how to take their masks off. And I was saying to a client, I could not live with myself if I knew I was a part of getting someone sick. And I think people with autoimmune who are so sensitive and their bodies cannot fight these viruses. We got to wear our masks. We got to wash our hands. We got to do the social distancing. We need to give them emotional support, which, you know, we were talking about earlier, the effects of emotional stress and strain on all these systems.
Right.
That it's so important. And for people with autoimmune, they really have to hear how important it is to gain support and stay well connected. Create that community that will support you and back you up and listen to you.
Absolutely.
So that you can do everything in your power to strengthen that body. But now I have one quick question. So here comes my ignorance. So where does Alzheimer's fall? That's not autoimmune.
Not really. Adult onset diabetes is called type 2 diabetes.
Yes.
And diabetes is primarily an inflammatory disorder.
Right.
They're also finding that coronary artery disease is primarily an inflammatory disorder.
Yeah.
So your body's inflamed for a variety of reasons. They're now seeing that with Alzheimer's, they're calling it type 3 diabetes because it's an inflammatory disorder and the process starts about 40 years before.
Wow.
So if you can decrease the reason for the inflammation when somebody is 40 or 50, and there's some things that can be done in order to even break down these tangles that appear in the brain in early stage Alzheimer's, then you should be able to turn things around. Most of these meds wait until somebody's already real bad, because this is my bias. I don't think the drug companies can make a whole lot of money by changing the reason for the inflammation 40 years before.
Yeah.
But as more people are becoming aware that inflammation is very problematic, they're starting to make changes, and hopefully there will be less Alzheimer's in another 20 or 30 years. I don't think we'll be able to change the high frequency of it now.
So,
Dr. For people who are suffering from an autoimmune disease, and again, people like we've talked about tonight, my wife, Matt's wife. If it's not getting better for them or they're not seeing progress, what should their first step be so we can direct them? Like, okay, here's the first thing you need to do.
The first step on their own, or to see somebody who does integrative medicine?
Well, maybe that's the first step.
Yeah.
That's the first step, is to see somebody who does integrative medicine.
Yeah.
The first step. And then,
first step even prior to that is a willingness to make some major, major changes.
Okay. Because again, I know we've had a lot of meetings with different rheumatologists and different medications, and it just seems like it's the hamster wheel. It's just things,
right?
You know, and we're maintaining that there's no improvement. And I guess for those people out there suffering from something, maybe their first step is to see an integrative medicine doctor
and to do whatever the appropriate tests are. I do regular blood tests that would go to a local lab, and then I use a lot of specialty labs for looking at different toxins, looking at the stool for tons of tests, dealing with absorption and presence of a variety of bugs, and urine tests, looking at the hormone levels and what could be impacting it, if they're going down the proper pathway to be broken down, or if they're going down the wrong route. Mm-hmm. And you also check for certain genetic markers. Mm-hmm. Because if you have certain mutations, you can't metabolize, let's say, some of the B vitamins properly, and you need B vitamins for energy or for brain function or whatever the condition happens to be.
Mm-hmm. Whew, you know,
let me have one more question. I'm sorry, but somebody's looking for an integrative medicine doctor. Is it how do I put this? Is it easy to find one? Do they promote themselves as integrative medicine doctors?
Most of them do.
Okay.
Want to look and just inquire as to their training. If it's somebody who's just started in the field, they don't have that much experience yet. They still might know their stuff, but you want to talk with them and find out. Mm-hmm. In this area, there's a number of people.
Okay.
And Barbara is at the Parkway Center in Ann Arbor, correct?
Right.
Do I have that right? And the Parkway Center is, I used to have an office there with my dear friend Laura Battalaro. Shout out to Laura. It is a homeopathic center, but Dr. Dennis Chernin and Dr. Linkner, mm-hmm. I don't know, there was another doctor that used to be there.
Yeah, he has retired.
He's retired. The musician, Spear?
Mm-hmm. I believe that's right.
But Dr. Chernin brought homeopathy to Ann Arbor like 30, 40 years ago and created this center. But the great thing about the center and people like Barbara is Dr. Chernin is a regular physician and also a physician of homeopathy. Right. And it's really their perspective there, just to give them a shout out, you know, and, you know, the physicians will say, if you need an antibiotic, I'm giving you an antibiotic. But if we can do it other ways, we will do it other ways. And the foundation is just what she said in the beginning, is to really take a look at the whole system and say, okay, what is the reason that these symptoms are happening? And it's a great place just to give the Parkway Center a plug.
They're amazing. Both Dr. Chernin and Dr. Linkner are well-versed in homeopathy. I am not.
Very much so.
I know nothing about it.
But the whole center is about an integrative approach.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
To really look at the whole body. And when my practice was there, it was wonderful, because if I was listening to somebody and then I was hearing about the sugar intake and anxiety, I could refer them, you know, to a doctor or even the nutritionist that was there, and just take this more holistic approach.
Yeah, it's some fabulous people who are there.
Yeah. So, and that's where she is, you know. Barbara is at the Parkway Center in Ann Arbor
Huron Parkway.
Huron Parkway, corner of Huron and Washtenaw.
Yeah, just a little bit south of Washtenaw.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. You know, I'm going to just throw this out real quick to those people who have been so extremely stressed. And like we were saying earlier, the cravings of sugar, you know, even through those who are excessively drinking. That's another big explosive problem that's being created with the stress. But it all goes back to, when we're talking about deciding to do a lifestyle change, that it really is about putting yourself first, to really open yourself up, to connect with yourself, first of all, to really know when you're stressed, what it does to you, that you're valuable, you're important, and that you have to really choose and advocate for your health and well-being. And you got to get yourself there to do it. I think about, after I had my kids, I gained a ton of weight, 50 pounds, ton of weight. I felt miserable. You know, I was a pretty big girl, pregnant, like 255, and I'm not even 5'4". I was a big girl. Everybody thought I was having twins. And I remember after I had the baby, about 4 or 5 months down the road, I wasn't losing weight. I was gaining a couple pounds, and I thought, oh, I have a problem. I have to do something. And I have diabetes in my family. I have heart disease in my family. And in the worst mood at that time, I drove to Weight Watchers. And I thought, I am hating every minute of this. And I am hating the fact that I'm going to get on a stupid scale in front of people and face all of my weight gain. And I hated it. And I hated it, you know, going, listening to people talk. I was not happy. But the only thing I knew is to keep showing up. Just show up. This is better than you eating more and more stuff. Next thing you know, I lost the 50 pounds. And I felt better. And as I lost like 5 pounds, then I started to feel the motivation come. And then I wanted to do some more. And then I lost 10 pounds and I lost 12 pounds. To those people out there that might listen to this going, oh, I don't feel like doing that. Stop. Listen to me. Cut the shit. Like, seriously. And just get yourself there. Just get started. Because if you wait until you're all gangbusters and feeling good about it, it ain't going to happen. Because it doesn't work like that. Change doesn't work like that. So your body is important and you're valuable. And, you know, I think we care enough to tell you the truth. Don't you think?
And sure hope so. Whenever you're approaching something, again, Mary Grace, the weight gain or weight loss is a good example that people have to realize it's not going to happen overnight. In fact, most of the time when I'm dealing with people who want to lose weight, you have to make a realistic goal. It's small steps that will get you to where you want to be.
Exactly.
Be committed to doing those small steps along the way.
Exactly. Especially if you want to keep it off. Anybody can lose weight. How few people keep it off? It's just like with autoimmune. It's just like with any other addiction, weight issues, you know, self-abuse, whatever that issue is, you have to just work at it and you'll get better and you'll gain more control with working steps and keep moving forward. And like we say every week, don't isolate yourself. Get help. Let people in to help you, because it's not going to work by yourself. You won't keep it off, or you won't keep yourself stable if you really don't let people in that, you know, really care and want to see you succeed. Like all of us. Right, guys? Right, Matthew?
Yes, I agree. I think truth has a lot to do with it. I'm sitting here listening to everything. And I think a lot of, especially right now, and I've actually in real time have experienced that with some of my, the clients and the population that I'm serving, there's so much pain. And it's not that it just feels insurmountable. It has been insurmountable. And I think also when we're talking about, autoimmune or kind of amnestic, frontal temporal dementia, Alzheimer's, you know, diabetes, all these different things actually not only feel, but they have been insurmountable at times. And I think meeting it with truth, so going, you know, the integrative approach of actually being truthful. And sometimes, you know, patients will ask questions and I'll say to them, I can't guarantee what your happiness will actually be. But I can guarantee, like you were saying, Mary Grace, showing up and not isolating and actually taking the advice, because I gain nothing from hurting you, that I can guarantee that you'll be happier. I don't know what that happy is going to be by you and your definition, but I do know that you'll be happier.
Yeah, it's true. Well, I say that in the office a lot of times. I'll say, look, this work we're doing better prove itself.
Well,
it doesn't. You got to go see someone else. Like, this work better prove itself.
And you guys know, we all do this. You pace it for them. Like, what do you want your life to look like in a year, in 2 years? Describe it to me. Give me details. You have to get that vision in their mind. And if they will buy into that.
Yeah. Yeah. And to vent when you feel discouraged and pissed off and stressed out, helpless, hopeless. You have to vent those emotions and connect with someone when you're in that space. And the key here is that we all go through that. We all get stressed out. We all can feel helpless at times. We all can struggle with issues. You know, I got that phrase, you know, you're not crazy. You're just stuck. And there are people like Barbara today and Matthew and Dave and myself who really do care and want you to do well. So, yeah. And anybody who's looking for a doctor in integrative health, especially, Barbara is the person. She is, at the Parkway Center in Ann Arbor. And we will have a link. I think I'll have a link. Barbara, do you have a link to?
Yeah, I sent it to you. It's ipsimedical.com, ypsimedical.com.
Okay. Great. And I will make sure that that's posted on our Podcast Detroit network so people can see it. We have to come to a close. I mean, like I said, Barbara, it goes so fast.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for the opportunity. Well,
you are wonderful. I hope you'll come back again.
I'd love it.
Especially with, you know, again, all the stress that everybody seems to be under right now. But yeah, we've got, well, go ahead.
I was going to say, if you can find Mary Grace at PsychedByMG.
At psychedbymg.com. And I'm on LinkedIn and Instagram and Facebook, of course, where you're and watching
Matthew live. Burita as well.
Matthew Burita.
And again, you can find me, David Wright, at either MotorCityHypnotist.com or at CounselingAndTherapyAssociates.com.
Yep. And all these links are going to be on Podcast Detroit. Just look up Psyched by MG. And again, thank you so much, Barbara, for joining us.
My pleasure.
Thank you, Barbara.
Amazing guest to all those people who have been stressed out and struggling with autoimmune. I don't know if Jamie and Matt are there. Hello, guys.
We're on the way out.
Yeah. So we are going to close the show and we're going to, oh, real quick, Friday.
Brennan.
We have Denise Brennan on. She is the author of like 26 children's books. She is amazing. She actually got me to do my very first podcast with her show. But she is on next week and we're going to talk about kids. So we hope you'll join us. And thanks again, everybody. Have a wonderful night.
Thank you.
Bye, guys. See you soon.